Buenos días. Aloha. Ni hao. Good afternoon, y'all. President Casey, Board of Trustees, faculty and staff, class of 2010, friends and family, and of course, Marvin. Are we in Greencastle or Costa Rica? Feels like Costa Rica. Well, it's a beautiful day, and it's really good to be back. I was surprised and deeply honored to be chosen to speak to you today. I thought you had to be a famous alum to be asked to speak at commencement, or apparently you can be a sea turtle guy. But I hear the sea turtle guys all across the country are giving commencement speeches, and it's just the rage this year, so it's just a little trend. I thought I would, why would someone who studies the ocean be asked to speak to graduates at a university in the heartland of our country? Well, the first and most obvious reason is that I attended DePauw. The second reason is that we live on an ocean planet. We live on the same planet. The surface of our planet is mostly seawater. Our actions, no matter where we are, matter to the future of the ocean, and the future of the ocean matters to all of us. Even so, I think it's safe to say that I'm the first turtle guy to give a commencement speech at DePauw, and perhaps not the last. When I was asked to give this speech, I had to check in on what commencement speeches are like these days, what they sound like, what the tenor is like. And I look back on the dozens of brilliant people who have stood right here and spoken to the graduating class and the faculty. People made you laugh, people who made you cry, people who told you what they think you need to know to make the world a better place and to live your lives more meaningfully. People who talked about how they really didn't fit in and weren't sure what they were doing back when they were at school here. What I learned from all of them is that life is sometimes funny and sad, and no one really knows exactly what the future will bring. Many people who achieve success and live their dreams often feel like they don't fit in, and they aren't always sure what they're doing. But that's why we're all here on this beautiful blue planet, figuring it out and fighting it out together. My next question was, who are you? Because lesson number one in public speaking is know your audience. Lesson number two is be sure your speech has a beginning, a middle, and an end. So for the beginning, I'd like to talk a little bit about me and my time here. For the middle, I'm going to talk about you. And at the end, I'm going to talk about us. And I'm going to explain why you're holding a blue marble. So the beginning, me. For 4 years during the 1980s, I explored these 50 square blocks we call the DePauw campus and its surroundings, joined by my dog, Blue, Labrador Retriever. He was in the yearbook, by the way. It's a yearbook picture. You can check it out. 1989, Blue Nichols. I'm certain I checked out this place more thoroughly than most students. Certainly, I really checked it out. I really spent a lot of time looking in unusual places. Wearing a mask and snorkel, I dove to the bottom and explored the diversity, the beautiful underwater diversity of the former Bowman Pond. Believe it or not. My first discovery about Bowman Pond as a young scientist is that it's only 5 feet deep. Then I went on to discover that it's also home to a shopping cart, a bike, some bottles and cans, and a few pledge pins. We explored the cemeteries, the stadiums, and we found our way through the tunnels, the back doors, and onto the rooftops of most of the buildings on campus. We played our guitars into the wee hours in an empty Meharry Hall, and I'll tell you, that place has really sweet acoustics. Playing guitar at the penitentiary down the road and giving lessons to a young woman in a nursing home in Greencastle who'd lost her memory in a car accident, I learned how music can help heal the brain. We learned to scuba dive in the cold, silty rock quarries just down the road, and I spent many nights camped on their rims. We kayaked or canoed nearly every navigable river in the state and camped in most of the state parks. I learned about the plants and animals living on campus and off. I could tell you the genus and species of the weeds that grew in the cracks, next to Harrison Hall. Common chickweed, Stellaria medea, in case anybody's wondering. Check it out on your way out. During winter terms, groups of us trained as emergency medical technicians, we made two service trips to Peru, one to Guatemala, with the legendary Reverend Fred Lamar. I volunteered for Putnam County Rescue for 3 years. There's no better way to get to know a people and a place than being a first responder. I wrote about my adventures in a weekly column in the campus paper appropriately called Wildlife. Two words. Looking back, I may have been a little strange for this place. In fact, I think I was a little strange for this place. But from the look of things now and the amazing students I've met, I think I'd fit right in. When you get to know a place, I mean, when you really get to know it, the beautiful flowers as well as the weeds, you fall hopelessly in love. Even so, when it was time for Blue and I to go, we were ready. We were really ready. In fact, I think Blue was sitting right at the end of the stage in the driver's seat of my Jeep, packed and idling, ready for me to jump in after Dr. Bottoms handed me my diploma and I flipped my tassel. Blue was a good dog. He was not a very good driver. But during that senior year, I had read the book. The year I graduated, 1989, was the year Bill McKibben wrote his first book called The End of Nature. I read it, I reread it, and I probably read it again. McKibben described the destructive path that we were on and the consequences for life on Earth if we didn't move decidedly and strongly towards sustainability and away from our addiction to fossil fuels. 2 decades later, what Bill wrote has come to pass, much faster than he had predicted. When I read that book, I got this feeling of falling through some kind of endless Indiana Jones tunnel with snakes and all that creepy stuff. Except it was different. Indiana Jones, he sort of knows he's going to end up in the tunnel because it's in the script. And he always ends up in spooky places and tunnels or tombs or exploding mountains, usually with lots of snakes. But here I was, just sitting in a comfortable chair in Royal West Library, one moment, about to get my bachelor's degree at a premier liberal arts institution, and the next moment I'm free-falling through a snake tunnel. As I read this book, I thought to myself, holy cow. Except I didn't say cow. We are totally in trouble. Except I didn't say in trouble. Why the heck isn't everyone talking about this stuff? Except, you know, I didn't, you know, you get it. You get the idea. I left knowing that I'd squeezed every experience and every opportunity from DePauw. I had sucked the marrow out of this place, as Thoreau might say. And at that moment, I had discovered my passion. I wanted to fix what was being destroyed, plain and simple. I'll tell you, there's no greater gift than to find your passion, to be handed the keys and a license to drive. Just ask Blue. Little did I know that snorkeling in Bowman Pond, scuba diving in the quarry, writing for the DePauw, and ravaging Marvin's burritos was preparing me to be a marine biologist studying sea turtles in Baja, Mexico. Flip to the next chapter. I'm about your age, maybe a little bit older, and I'm standing with my father in his living room, and I'm about to begin a PhD program. And he looks at me in his Harvard MBA voice, summoning all of the gravitas of every father-son relationship ever formed on Earth, combined, and he asks, sea turtles, son, what are you going to do with sea turtles? And then the floor began to give way again, and I began to fall through that dark, deep, snake-lined Indiana Jones tunnel. And so I'm falling headfirst, upside down, in the dark, and I remember the bullwhip attached to my belt. That bullwhip could get Indy out of every situation, right? So then I'm back, staring in my father's eyes, summoning all the prodigal son, make my own way in the world, bravado that a 20-something-year-old could muster. And I looked my dad in the eye and I said, everything. And it felt good. So I said it again, a little bit louder, a little bit bolder, with a nod of my head, kind of to convince myself as much as him that I meant it. I said, I'm going to do everything. And he said, I don't know what that means. And I thought, neither do I. But I was free of the snake tunnel, and I was swept up in a fast river that I'd never been in before, and I liked it. The next chapter, after some years of grad school, advanced degrees in economics, evolutionary biology, wildlife ecology, travel spanning cultures and continents, my work is to study and protect the ocean, the single greatest living feature of our blue planet. Our team has tracked sea turtles swimming the ocean's widest expanse from 6,000 miles from Mexico to Japan. We scuba dive in places with animals a bit more exotic than the carp in Indiana's quarries and a bit better visibility than Bowman Pond. We've been challenged to think about how to clean up a continent-sized part of the ocean polluted by tiny bits of plastic accumulated over 100 years. We're also exploring the neuroscience behind how the feel and the sight and the sound of the ocean can calm and renew and heal our bodies and minds. As we gather here today, the world's worst environmental disaster is unfolding in slow motion in the Gulf of Mexico. Sea turtles have become the poster species for this oil spill, as well as the revolutionary response required of us going forward. Over the past 20 years, my campus has grown from a quarter square mile plot here in Greencastle to the 65 million square miles of the wide open Pacific. In that 20 years, DePauw has changed too. But then the word sustainability, back then the word sustainability and the prefix eco were never used, ever. If you said green, you meant money, or you were envious, or perhaps you were taking Bruce Sirlin's botany class. Organic was shorthand for the two most brutal semesters of my life, Organic Chem 1 and Organic Chem 2. Al Gore was a moderate senator from Tennessee. Leo DiCaprio was a punk 13-year-old reading comic books in Echo Park. And the Exxon Valdez, for the first time, caused many of us to seriously consider the downside of America's addiction to oil. Back then, life was tough. People actually drank water from the tap. Can you believe that? Today, our university is a national leader in the subjects of sustainability, environmental ethics, and socio-ecological problem solving. Plastic bottles are on the way out. Green is a lifestyle. Green is a TV channel. Green is sexy. Times have changed. The middle of the speech. So here you are, the class of 2010, and you are making the changes that inspired me. I've studied you. And you, as you may know, I friended the entire senior class on Facebook. Except for Alexandra, who repeatedly denied my requests. You're a smart young woman, Alexandra. As for the rest of you, I friended you all for a good reason. I'm a scientist, and it's important that I understand my subject matter. How can I give an adequate commencement speech without knowing you? So I'm a scientist. I studied the class of 2010, and here's what I learned just by observing. College students have much less time for computer games like Mafia Wars and Farmville than people with real jobs being paid to sit in front of their computers. Exactly none of you have poked me or gifted me a virtual strawberry patch. That's a good sign. You're a serious, studious, hardworking bunch. And while you weren't sure if you were going to survive that astronomy final, you did. DePauw students come from 42 states and 41 countries. 58% of you are women. 3% were born under the sign of Leo. When most of you were born, Ronald Reagan was president, people wrote on typewriters, and telephones were attached to things. You've spent most of your life in school increasing your understanding of this evolving world of ours. A very wise person once taught me that the foundation of love is understanding. And there's so much more to you than those statistics and what you know. After studying you a little bit more, a quote by Ray Davies of the Kinks came to mind. I'm a lover, not a fighter. But here's the thing. You're both. You are lovers and fighters. You love each other. You love your university. You love your president, your university president. You love your families. You really, really love your families. I can see that. You love this planet and you love all the life living on it. In fact, you love it so much you might even consider getting a small sea turtle tattoo in some discreet, easy to cover job interview location. But you're also fighters. You fought hard to reach this day, to graduate from college after almost two decades of schooling. You fought to make your campus cleaner and greener and your world more just. On campus, in the classroom, on the tracks, the courts, on the playing fields, as you travel the world, you fight for what you believe, for what you want. You fight for the things you love. And that's why you are lovers and fighters. Don't worry, you can be both. You're college graduates now. You can do lots of stuff simultaneously. Talk and walk, vote and hope, think and act, sing and march, swim and smile, all at the same time. You are lovers and fighters, and I greatly admire that. So what are you going to do with all that love and all that fight? Well, the shortest and best bullwhip of an answer I can think of is everything. But we're in the age of crowdsourcing, hive minds, flash mobs, swarm mentality, and hyper-networking. We have to answer these questions together as a group. So I asked the most interesting thinkers I know, scholars, poets, artists, and futurists. I asked them, what's your burning question for the 2010 class of lovers and fighters? They came back with some great answers, some great questions. Why does the Supreme Court think corporations should enjoy the same rights as individuals? Can government meet the challenges of climate change and cheap energy and our economic house of cards? Is there a real relationship between how hard I studied and how well I will do in the world? That one was from Billy Collins, former poet laureate of the U.S. You should read all of his poems. They're brilliant. Can democracy survive complexity? Where does all the plastic go? How do my decisions affect those who will live 100 years from now? How do we love all children of all species equally and for all time? And then, the most perplexing of all, if it's we. That one came from my 8-year-old daughter, Grace. She wrote it on the back of an envelope and handed it to me while I was writing the speech. It's sort of a question and an answer at the same time, as in, if it's we, who will renew our democracy? If it's we, who will discover a new way to live on the earth? If it's we, who will be the change? Then we must get beyond us versus them and focus on the idea that we all love our children, our parents, our friends and our special places, much more than our things and our ideas. What does being a lover and a fighter make you? It makes you an activist, because activists act. They fight for what they love. You know in your gut that there isn't time to mess around. You join organizations and groups. You start campaigns. You discuss and argue and analyze, and then you act. Like it or not, we are all activists now because the ocean is burning. The end of the speech. Us. So here you are graduating. You are well on your way to finding your passion. It's my sincere hope that something, it has something to do with the healing of what's broken on our planet today, whether your focus is on the environment or our fellow human beings. To do that, you must feel things deeply. Don't rely so much on reason and logic. And while it may seem funny that a scientist would tell you that, it's the neuroscientist who taught me that we can't have reason without emotion, that all of our decisions are based in emotion, whether we like it or not. Understanding this, how your own brain works, in the context of human evolution and the history of the universe, deepens our love and empathy for each other and all of life. This is the nugget of truth in our fight for the blue planet. So let's do a little exercise in perception. I came here from the West Coast by train. It took 62 hours, 2.5 days. If I'd taken the space shuttle, flying at maximum speed, straight away from the Earth, in that same amount of time, I would be about 1,000,000 miles away right now. Imagine yourselves out there, nice and cool, looking back. Now take out that blue marble. Hold it at arm's length. Look through the glass. From 1,000,000 miles, Earth, our home, would look about the size of that small blue marble. Pretend you're 1,000,000 miles away, looking back at Earth. That blue marble you see, it's your only home. And it's blue because of the ocean. My fellow biologist Richard Dawkins called the ocean the watery alma mater of all life. And Carl Sagan, another very smart man, once pointed out that the blue marble is where all of human history has happened. On this blue marble, we call Earth, every being who has ever lived was born and finished their lives. Every mother and father, every hopeful child and college graduate, every oil executive and every environmental activist, every dinoflagellate, every dinosaur, every sea turtle, every mountain lion, every single burst of passion and firing neuron that fights for what it loves has lived on just one planet. This lone, beautiful blue marble spinning in the vast emptiness of space, this Earth, our one and only blue marble, is where we must make our stand. So while we're here together on this Earth, we may as well fight for what we love, because as far as any of us knows, it's our only home. My hope is that you'll find and hold on to the passion that keeps you awake, the kind that sits you up, bolt upright, in bed, in the middle of the night, with excitement about your own ideas. My hope is that you will continue to fight for what you love. I've given you this simple gift made of glass, a blue marble, to remind you of what you already know, that the best things life has to offer are worth all the love and all the fight that you can muster. Don't be afraid. Just love and fight. Keep your cool. Maintain your center, but love and fight, and fight and love. And do it with everything you have. Because you are lovers and you are fighters. Congratulations and good luck.